Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
I think this market's about to get really serious, and it's not going to subsist on like middling bad products that like you bought because you got a deal on them. Hello and welcome back to the Plugged In Podcast, a weekly news show all about the future of transportation. I'm Patrick George, Editor-in-Chief at Inside EVs.
And I'm Tim Levin, Senior Editor at Inside EVs. On this week's show, Tesla released its long-awaited Master Plan Part 4. Is it what's next for Tesla or just AI slop? EV sales got a Trump bump this summer, but the party won't last. And our very own Kevin Williams toured Slate's upcoming factory and talked to its COO. He tells us what he learned. But first, Patrick, how are things going? How was your Labor Day weekend? Did you do anything fun?
It was good, man. Thank you for asking. We were talking about this yesterday. Like, I just like disconnected really hard over the holiday and was like barely online at all. And it was incredibly refreshing and a reminder that that's how humans are meant to live. And that the way we exist in modern times is horrifying. We big news at our house. We adopted a dog, another dog, a senior gentleman who was due to be euthanized. Rather unfairly, just because he's a little pooch with diabetes, but we've added him to our fleet. He joins our other Pomeranian. So we drove him home from a rescue in like deep in the heart of Pennsylvania, and that's what I did on my Labor Day. I acquired a dog. So yeah,
that's awesome. Sounds like a good weekend.
Yeah, and listeners to this pod will know that our first dog, or technically our second, like he occasionally he's very vocal, and so like his barks end up on this a lot, despite the heroic efforts of our producer Mike Perkins. But like the new guy, he's a lot more chill. He's quiet. He tends to listen more than he talks. So I like him so far.
Yeah. Are they getting along?
They're mostly getting along. They're not like best buds, but they seem to coexist quite well, and they team up to beg for treats and food at dinner time. So they've definitely got that down. Bunch of grifters. How about you, man? How was your holiday?
It was good. Like I said, 3-day weekends are like 1,000% better than 2-day weekends. Sorry to say, boss man.
I agree with you like even more. Yeah. No.
Yeah, 3-day weekends are awesome. I think all those countries, or if there are many, there are at least a couple of countries that are experimenting with a 4-day work week. I think that's a great idea. I think we should do more of that.
Why did I never think, as editor-in-chief of Inside EVs and like the head of US editorial at Motorsport, what if we tried this for a month? So everybody just don't come to work on Monday anymore, and we're just gonna see what happens and see if it works, you know? And if anyone notices.
The problem is we need to tell all the companies that they can't make any news on one day a week, which might be a little bit of a hard sell.
This is harder in the news business, sadly. Let's blame the automakers and be extra vengeful when we talk about them today, because they won't let us have 3-day weekends. All right, let's get down to business, shall we?
Yeah, one person who did not take a day off on Labor Day was Tesla CEO Elon Musk. Tesla came out with its Master Plan Part 4 on Monday, which I think is actually a really cool thing that this company does. They kind of, every few years, maybe sometimes more than that, you know, they'll come out with this this vision of kind of the big things they want to accomplish. And this one did not go great. Both The Verge and TechCrunch, and also a bunch of people online, said that it reads like AI slop, which I thought was maybe going a little bit too far, until I then went and actually read the thing and watched the accompanying video. I think that's a pretty apt description.
Yeah, I love it. Like several like big deal independent news outlets that are very authoritative in this space, like immediately called it as like, this sounds like AI, and like parts of it kind of do. Honestly, it's a little, it's GPT-ish. You know, let's put it that way. Yeah.
Yeah. You know how that, you know how they sometimes describe some of the recent models as like a smart high schooler or something? Like it, right. kind of does have that vibe.
Yeah, where it's like it's not just this, it's actually this that's bigger. It's like that's the whole damn thing, all of it, you know?
It is very general and somewhat stilted, and yeah, it does sound a little bit like a chatbot. Let's take a listen to some highlights.
Humans are tool makers, and at Tesla, we are builders of physical products at scale that make life better for all. We have been working tirelessly to create the foundation for a technological renaissance through the development of electric vehicles, energy products, and humanoid robots. This next chapter will be on an even grander scale than we have yet to see. We are building the products and services that bring AI into the physical world. We are combining our manufacturing capabilities with our autonomous prowess to accelerate global prosperity.
This chapter will be on an even grander scale than we have yet to see. Not A-plus work there, in my opinion. So if you read, there was also like an essay, a blog post that accompanied this video. If you read it, the idea is basically that solar, electric cars, autonomous cars, and robots will make the world a better place, with a lot of buzzwords like eliminating scarcity and advancing human prosperity. But I would not call this a plan, really. I would call it more of a kind of general vision. And that's not really any different than what we've heard on Tesla's earnings calls or seen in its earnings decks. What do you think about this, Patrick? What do you think of Tesla's master plan part four?
First and foremost, I think my favorite part is the hallmark of meritocracy is creating opportunities. And I'm just like, why? Like
what?
What the hell is that? Why is that in here? Like who shoehorned that in? It's just weird. It was like culture war-ish a little bit. At least that was my read on it. But no, fascinating overuse of the word abundance in this master plan, if you want to call it that.
And M dashes. Fascinating overuse of M dashes, which people say is AI. I don't know if I agree with that.
I'm offended by that because as a writer, I've always been a serial M-dash abuser, and I'm not going to stop now. No. I pry those M-dashes, all 47 of them that I use in any story, from my cold, dead hands. But no, it was fascinating to me that they used the word abundance so much in this. That concept, as a lot of you listeners may know, has been in the news a lot lately. I think of it as kind of like this pushback against the idea that sustainability or being eco-friendly, saving the planet, means doing without. It's almost like the opposite of conservation. It's like we can use technology to just create new things, create new solutions. Like we don't need to save water or save the planet or recycle whatever. We just create new things that fix these new things with technology and AI. And like, I don't think that the idea of like, holding back and going without for sustainability reasons really tracks with Americans anyway. Like, I mean, Tim, I'm a big believer in sustainability personally. I run Inside EVs. I'm also like that asshole American at a European hotel who cranks the thermostat down to like sub-zero levels and doesn't care because that's just who I am. This has been a popular idea on a lot of fronts lately. Like the Democratic Party is kind of leaning into this, the abundance agenda. And then the journalist Ezra Klein and Derek Thompson have a new book out about this that I would like to read at some point. And so what does this have to do with Tesla, right? Like if they're saying like abundance is about innovation, probably cutting regulations, which we know Elon Musk hates, building more, building better, not in a zero sum way. You know, it really sounds great if you're like into AI or Silicon Valley type, like growth is infinite, but one line in there. Lacking in all of this are any details about how it's going to get there and do this, or what's been different about the like energy products that they've been building for two decades now. What did you think?
Yeah, and I think you're, you know, reading between the lines, basically thinking that this is like, you know, relates to the abundance that's been like kind of in the zeitgeist now recently. This Ezra Klein idea of like, you know, progressives liberal governments can't get out of their own way. Like they, yeah. there's too much regulation. It means that big things can't happen anymore, like housing and infrastructure projects. This isn't really that. This is kind of just like platitudes about abundance, about
more,
creating
more
prosperity.
Things, more better, yeah. more things made by us that you buy.
Right. And I think what stuck out to me is the lack of really anything about cars from a car
yes.
company, which, you know, like I think if you've been paying attention to Tesla at all, and if you've been listening to this podcast, you know, that's not a shocking thing for Tesla right now. Like they are really positioning themselves as this AI and robotics company. And that's really mostly what this was about. I think the only thing that we did see on cars, and probably the most interesting part of this whole release, was in the background of like one shot for like a split second of this video.
Yeah.
You see these small models of potential like Cybertruck offshoots. There's like an SUV type and like a van that are these kind of angular stainless steel things. They're probably not going to actually become anything, but like that was cool. And that kind of harkens back to, as we'll talk about, like the old master plans, which actually talked about the future cars that Tesla's going to make. But yeah, like Tesla's been trying to convince shareholders, convince the public that it is this robotics and this autonomy company. And like, does this help tell that story or like push that narrative? Like, I don't know. It's like not really any different than what everybody has already heard before.
And I guess I've been wondering lately, like, was that the point, right? Like, this is all stuff you and I know very well because we listened to all the Tesla earnings calls, I believe because we're being punished by God. But like, you know, we cover this company and we pay attention to this stuff. But like, if you're just an average person, it's like, maybe hearing about this in the news or seeing it on social media, maybe you're the audience. You're the one who's they're intending to convince that, oh, it's an AI company. It's a robotics company. Whereas like, you know, any like hardcore Tesla booster has been saying that for years. And like, that's often like a piece of criticism when we get when we are critical of like the Cybertruck, which like last year we gave some pretty so-so reviews to, and it was like, you don't understand. Well, this is it's a robotics and AI company, because and you're stupid. That's like, okay, well, you know, cars aren't that great. And it's also to be like no different from all those calls where like some analyst or investor says to Elon, like, when is the $25,000 Tesla coming out? And he's like, no, robots. Like, I want to talk about robots. Like, steering wheels are stupid. We're not making a cheaper Tesla, even though people would buy it. Just like, shut up, robots.
People don't recognize how profound this is.
Yeah. Oh God, that's
classic.
Yeah.
Classic phrase. Yeah. And even I think even some of those Tesla boosters seemed pretty unimpressed by this. Like there were a lot of comments, obviously, on Twitter or on X that were like so excited for this future, you know, just bought more stock. But there were also a lot of people who were like, really, that's the plan. And Elon Musk even replied to one of the kind of big Tesla influencers who said he needed more details. Musk was like, fair enough. We'll add more specifics. So Elon Musk gets that this was maybe not what some of the Tesla fans were hoping for.
Yeah, it's like, you know what other car companies, like when they put out big messages like this, it goes through like IR people and like, you know, like General Motors has more lawyers than like some mid-sized cities in America have people, you know. It's like, I'm kind of wondering who at Tesla like put this together. Like the video is real slick. I'll give them that. It looks cool. But like, it doesn't feel like it was put together by anybody with like messaging and communications experience at all.
Yeah.
I get why even the Tesla fans were a little let down, because like, I was hoping, you know, you would take us through some past master plans. Like some of these have been, while short and kind of bloggy like this one, like they've been really interesting or certainly more in-depth, right?
Yeah, totally. Like that's what I was going to say, is like the old ones were very much not like overly PR'd posts like this one was, or just like very vague. They were actually like quite specific and kind of fun. And they were actually written by Elon Musk, supposedly. Like they would go up on the Tesla site and being attributed to him. And it does sound like a person's voice, you know, and they were cool. They were endearing. Like they were yeah. a small kind of scrappy company trying to tell you what they were working on and like what they saw for themselves in the future. And it was kind of cool. And
yeah, the very first one he names it, the very first one in 2006, he names it, you know, the secret Tesla Motors master plan just between you and me. And it's like, it's kind of fun to read today. And it has yeah. the vibe of like the times that I covered Tesla in the 2010s. And it was like the times I really liked them. It was like when they were like this really tiny upstart, like throwing hard punches at a way bigger opponent. Like it was like, okay, here's this guy and he's got some swagger. He's probably insane, but like, okay, this takes some balls that he would to do what he's doing. Like that was fun to read, you know?
Yeah. So the first one kind of lays out like why they're making this, the Tesla Roadster, their first like really high end car, how it's more efficient than gas cars, like all these things that are kind of like teaching the world, teaching people about EVs and like why it's worth investing in this thing, why it's worth paying attention to this company. And at the end of it, it has these kind of legendary four bullets that summarize it. And it's build sports car, use that money to build an affordable car, use that money to build an even more affordable car, while doing above, also provide zero emission electric power generation options. And they did that. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
They kind of like called their shots in 2006 and they did exactly that. And they're even a little past, like they even have more cars than just that. And they have a solar and energy business. So like, you know, Elon Musk called his shot.
Yeah, no, to their credit. Like, I mean, you have to give them that. Like they did that stuff and it was, mm-hmm. it was so improbable. And like, this is such a hard industry to break into as a startup. Like they did the impossible. That came out in 06. So like, okay, 2-3 years before like the world's financial systems melted down. Like, I don't know. It's I wouldn't be here. You wouldn't be here. We'd be talking just about the stuff that we talk about every week if it hadn't been for them doing that. I don't think that, you know, I don't think that companies like General Motors or Kia will be doing home energy storage or like this EV could power your house if that stuff hadn't started there, if that revolution hadn't begun there. So, all right, master plan one, like it took some guts, but like, hey, they did it. Cool.
Complete. You know? Yeah. So then we get to master plan part two, 10 years later, 2016. And again,
part
it's
due.
Like a
part due.
Yeah. That's not just us. That is what it's called.
Yes.
It's like a fun kind of, it reads like casual and personal. And like Elon Musk says in it, starting a car company is idiotic and an electric car company is idiocy squared, which is just like, that's funny.
Yeah.
This one was about launching cars in all key automotive segments, building self-driving cars that can earn you money by deploying them as taxis. They are still not technically done with that one yet. This kind of to me is like where they are, what they are still working on right now.
Yeah. And it's fascinating that came out in 16. And it's like you could sort of trace the trajectory of where Elon's thinking about this stuff. It's like or Elon and people on his team to give credit to like the many, many really smart people that have worked at Tesla over the decades. This is where they're beginning to think like there is a future beyond like personal car ownership. Mm-hmm. And we make the car and we sell the car and that's the business forever and ever, amen. So like we're getting beyond that, and like, but you said no one has pulled that off yet. I think that's probably a decades away plan. It took him 9 years to get a robo taxi service going that's in one small part of Austin and it's owned by the company. So baby steps, but it's interesting to see that thinking progress, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then we get to master plan three that came out in 2023. I got to tell you, I kind of forgot about that one. I'm sorry to say.
Also, it was very different from the other ones. Like, I don't blame you.
It was a 41 page, like basically white paper. Like they cited their sources and everything. Like someone worked very hard on this, like thesis thing with annotations about like how to move to a sustainable energy future. And fun fact, Master Plan 3 does tease some new Tesla models that are hidden under a sheet. And I'm pretty sure neither of us were working at Inside EVs that spring, but like I'm sure they at the time like did the like these are the upcoming Tesla models. But when you look at them today, it's pretty clear that that's the Cybercab and the Robovan under the sheet there. So
I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah, I didn't until like this morning when I started working on.
Sorry, did you say Robovan?
Robovan. Robovan. Yeah. Yes, that's it was the Robovan under the sheet. So it was like everyone was like, kind of like, oh man, there's more Teslas coming. I was like, ah, sort of like they're maybe, you know, they don't have steering wheels and we don't know if they're ever gonna get made. Then we get to Master Plan 4. Like you said, no new cars previewed there, no new products, not a lot new at all. Yeah.
Yeah. And potentially written by Grok. You know, Musk also owns XAI, which makes his chatbot. I think it's just fun. I don't know that TechCrunch and The Verge legitimately thought that, but it is possible.
If it had been written by Grok, it would have had that like sneering Model UN teenager like vibe that Grok has. It's like, don't like it. Well, facts are smarter than you are, loser. Like it's like kind of vaguely insulting when people use it. Like, yeah. You know, it would have had this just kind of like nastiness about it. It's like, just calm down, man. You know, calm down.
Yeah.
Who hurt you, Grok? Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think the important thing is this is a company that could really use a narrative shift. Like when people in my personal life come up to me and they ask about Tesla, it's always like, oh man, their sales are doing terrible, right? Like, when are they going to come out with a new model? When are they going to refresh those things? Like, are they going to be able to compete with China? And these are all real issues, right? Lack of product. It failed to launch this cheaper car, or it has not launched this cheaper car, which now we know is just going to be some kind of version of a Model Y. Like, they're now known as this company that's like led the EV revolution and then kind of like ceded that to other companies. It's become known as the company that like has been talking about autonomous cars for a really long time and has not delivered on that in a major way yet, although the Robotaxi launch this June was like a significant step forward. And so like the fact they're, you know, coming out with at that moment, it's a minute long vague video and a blog post is like kind of from a if I put on my like brand, you know, strategy hat, like kind of confounding that they wouldn't like take that opportunity to say something really big about, okay, if you want it to be robots, like tell us about the robots, right? Don't just be like abundance.
Yeah, and just more robo-taxis.
At the same time, I will say Tesla's stock is up 59% over the last year as we record this. So the hype around this company is still very much alive and well, and there's clearly plenty of people who believe in it, or at least believe in the stock.
Yeah, I believe that it is the company that will solve and deliver like autonomous vehicles at scale and soon, which I find very doubtful, but we'll see. You know what my take is? Just Tesla, just make the damn $25,000 EV, like the one that everyone's asking about, everyone's wanted forever. You know, Elon has said like that's pointless, that's counter to what we believe, like it would be stupid to make more cars with steering wheels, like we're all in autonomy. But like, he does mea culpas all the time. He backed off on the supercomputer recently. Like, he like come up with some excuse and just do it. Just like drop on us like the Toyota Corolla or the Chevy Trax of EVs at 25 grand and it's actually really good, and call it a day and shut the haters up. You call it the Model STFU. That's my great idea for this company, since we're playing brand strategists right now. You'll release the Model STFU. It's just like, everybody shut up. You wanted your cheap Tesla on a bespoke platform. It's actually really good, because like, believe it or not, the new Model Y is excellent. And it'll print money. It would probably prop up the entire American EV industry through like the remainder of the Trump administration and like whatever happens after that. So tax credits are no. So then Elon and his robot slave army can colonize Mars like he's always wanted to. That's a real master plan right there, you know? Yeah. You're welcome, Elon. I take Venmo. I'm not on PayPal though. Take Venmo.
Mic drop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
All right. Well, meanwhile, back on planet Earth, the auto executives who don't dream of interstellar colonization through robot enslavement, or at least don't admit that publicly, they had a great month of selling EVs in August, didn't they, Tim?
Yeah, aside from Tesla, you could argue that America's EV leaders in terms of sales are General Motors, Ford, and the Hyundai Motor Group, which has Kia and Hyundai and Genesis. All three had really good months in August, as the general public seems to be pretty aware that the $7,500 EV tax credit is going away at the end of September.
We really hope that you're not hearing about that right now for the first time, but if you are, thoughts and prayers.
Yeah. Any listeners of the show will be well aware. So it's that. It's the end of the EV tax credit is basically like pushing a lot of people to buy EVs. If they've been even like remotely thinking about it, they're going ahead and buying or leasing these cars before the tax credit expires. And then it's also a lot of manufacturers just dumping on incentives to try and get these cars moving off the lots again before the kind of the market starts to take a dive or at least slow down. Average incentives on EVs hit $8,000 last month, according to J.D. Power, manufacturer
nice.
Incentives. And that is not including anything you'd get from the tax credit. So it could be well over $10,000 that people are effectively getting when they buy an EV or lease an EV.
In theory, certain models, you're looking at a 15K discount. In
yes.
theory, if you find the right one, right place, right time, man, that's a hell of a deal, I tell you right now.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so this kind of soup.
America's big back to gas fire sale, right? Get them while you can.
Yeah, exactly. So the company, J.D. Power, also said that EVs hit a record 12% share of the car market in August. Again,
wow.
on the back of everybody just rushing out to buy these things. And then there are some companies that have been doing really well in particular. So on Tuesday, GM said that it sold over 21,900 EVs in the U.S. in August. This was a new monthly record, beating July's 19,000. If you expand that over the year, that's, what, well over 200,000 EVs at a monthly rate. That's not what they're going to do, but that is a lot of cars. The Equinox EV, their kind of cheaper one, pulled in over 8,500 sales last month. And according to my back of the napkin math, this all means that in the first 8 months of this year, GM has already sold more EVs in 2025 than it sold in all of 2024, which is 114,000.
Yeah, that's outstanding. Good for them. And I think the way that this, we'll see how long this trend goes. It could very well end up like in America, the Equinox EV is like, it might end up being like the best selling non-Tesla EV, like of all time. Like
mm-hmm.
until whatever else potentially dethrones it, but like that could have real like long term legs there.
Yeah, it is heading that way. Some others that did well: Hyundai and Kia had a great month, really strong months for the Hyundai Ioniq 5 and Kia EV9. Ford said that Mustang Mach-E sales were up 35%, hitting their highest monthly total ever in the model's history at over 7,000 Mach-Es sold. So yeah, it is like absolute boom time for EVs this summer.
That's great news, but everyone kind of feels like this party won't last, and GM is sort of openly admitting that, right?
Yeah, so in this same release that GM had earlier this week, kind of bragging about how great their August sales were, they also kind of were tempering expectations for the future, basically saying, yeah, like, our EV sales are doing extremely well right now, but do not be surprised if they start to fall pretty severely toward the end of this year once the EV tax credit ends. And so in a blog post, Duncan Aldred, who is GM's president of North America, said that the company's expecting strong demand again in September. Makes sense because tax credit doesn't end until the end of that month. But he also said, and I quote, "There's no doubt we'll see lower EV sales next quarter after tax credits end on September 30th, and it may take several months for the market to normalize. We will almost certainly see a smaller EV market for a while." So, yeah, pretty bold words there from GM, just basically saying like, yeah, it may not be great after September.
And he adds, "And we won't overproduce." Mm-hmm. So, like, that's a really interesting and like unusually candid and clear-eyed statement from any car company executive. Like, I kind of, that really kind of stood out to me. And like, to be fair, he goes on to hype up like GM's energy investments and the growing charging network and like the Chevy Bolt coming back, which they didn't say this, but we're anticipating that'll be at or under 30 grand. I think that's going to do really well. But like,
and he also dunks on other automakers that have irrational discounts and that are pulling back their plans. So
yeah, it's just interesting to be like, yeah, like, look, this is real. We're going to see what happens. We got a good lead, but like, it is what it is. So I don't know. That level of candor is unusual in the business we cover, you know?
Yeah, totally. I think the big question is, and I don't know if anybody really has a hard answer right now. We know we have some estimates, obviously, but the big question is like, okay, after this quarter, how sharply does this market turn downward? You know, does it keep growing? How fast? And for how long are we going to see this kind of slowdown? You know, and what does it mean for a company like GM that has invested billions of dollars in developing like 10 new EVs? What does it mean for those big investments if the EV market slows down significantly?
Yeah, it's interesting. And it's company by company and brand by brand, right? Like, we had a story not long ago about, like, Cadillac is kind of crushing it right now in ways that we haven't seen since, like, either Kennedy or Johnson were president. Like, I just...
Back when you were a young boy.
Back when I was a young boy. Now, my hair is gray, but it's not that gray. But, like, you know, like, the tail fin era of Americana. Yeah. Like, a Cadillac from 85 when I was born is probably not something it's going to be remembered as an American classic today. But, they've had a lot of success with electric vehicles, that brand. Like, I don't think GM's going to want to give that up. And, like, yeah, they've done deals and they've given incentives on those cars. But, like, they're not just going to, like, I don't know, like, go back to... For every Blackwing Cadillac that got sold, there was a lot of kind of, I don't know, middling gas Cadillacs, and the EVs are the best stuff they've made in decades. So they're not going to do that. And then also, if we're talking about General Motors, right? Like, it's, they've said this, and I think Ford has said this too. Like, okay, they're building up their battery operations, and they're gonna sell those batteries or use them for battery energy storage systems, which are becoming really big for AI data centers or for grid support. So like, they've kind of found like a side hustle for their battery business, which maybe that's a long-term thing, or maybe that's like what you do until EV sales take off again someday. But I think that like the biggest prediction I have here, it's like, we've seen a lot of people go electric over the last couple of years in America. Like, we're up to 12% of car buyers in August alone. Even more people, probably an untold amount of people buying used electric cars. Those people, statistically speaking, are not going back to gas.
Right.
They just broadly aren't. So like, I think that there has been created an organic level of demand for what's next from these people. And losing the EV tax credit and losing kind of those Biden era fuel economy rules that were pushing the market to go more electric, which is unfortunately very damaging to the climate if those go away. That also, like, losing all that stuff takes away the participation trophies and the training wheels. And like, from now on, like, electric vehicles are going to have to win because they're awesome. Like RJ Scridge told us a couple weeks ago, like, they're going to have to win because it's a better product.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I think if you're an automaker that's been like phoning this in for now, like your Stellantis or, you know, Toyota for a while, like, a day's going to come when like, a new player who takes this seriously and got costs down and is like ready to compete in the day that like BYD shows up in America, like, they're going to show up and like kick some ass, and like nothing is going to like save them. Then I think this market's about to get really serious, and it's not going to subsist on like middling bad products that like you bought because you got a deal on. Like, it's, someone's going to have to come out with some things that are like really, really good here and worth buying. Like, that's how I see that going over time. What's your take on what's next post tax credit, post anything we've just talked about?
I think that people should remember, it's probably not going to be like overnight that all these deals go away. Like, you should obviously act very quickly, but it'll be some sort of like slow, you know, tapering down of these deals, because there will probably still be Honda Prologues or whatever left on the dealer lot on October 1st that they're going to need to sell. But Yeah, I mean, I largely agree with you. I think the thing that keeps these companies going is that, and the thing that makes this really hard, is that they still need to scale, right? They still need, if you're GM, you've invested so much money in these cars. If you're any of these companies that's not Tesla, you've invested so much money in building these platforms that it's important to remember that they're not just going to like turn around on a dime and convert all the, you know, lose billions of dollars converting all these plants back to gas and just go with that for the rest of the decade. Like, they have a strong financial incentive to keep building EVs and to keep growing those sales so they can actually make money on them. As it makes this really difficult. And yeah, I think I agree with you. That's what means that, like, going forward, you're going to need to sell some really good EVs to capture buyers because they're not going to be subsidized anymore.
Indeed.
Speaking of what the next few years will look like in the EV space, one effort that's gotten a lot of attention is Slate Auto. This is the startup backed by Jeff Bezos that's aiming to put an electric truck on American roads by 2027 for around $25,000. You've probably heard of Slate by now, but if not, it's doing this super basic, stripped down, bare bones EV that aims to be the kind of basic transportation that's been missing for America for so long. It's two seats, two doors, no infotainment system, roll-up manual windows. It is super, super basic.
Yeah, imagine the Chevy S10 that you rolled up in high school, but it has a battery out of the floor. Cheap cars are hard to come by these days, and here comes Slate with one that's electric, no less. So it's a really intriguing idea, but everyone's wondering how they're going to pull this off, especially with the EV tax credits going away. So Inside EV's Kevin Williams was dispatched to Slate's Indiana factory, or what's going to be that factory, I suppose, to see how things are going. And then he was kind enough to join us to talk about today. Everybody, please welcome back to the Plugged In podcast, Kevin Williams.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
We're great, man. Thanks for joining us today, dude. And thank you for stepping up to road trip from Columbus, where you live, to Warsaw, Indiana, which you did in a rented Ioniq 5. I hope that was not a bad road trip.
Yeah, it really wasn't bad at all. It doesn't make any sense to fly at such a short distance. I think it took maybe 4 hours. And thankfully, the Ioniq 5 I had was a 2022 long-range all-wheel drive. Did it in one charge.
All those things, man. I'm telling you, they're great.
Yep,
they're
left, what they left, do. left the rental place at 100% and showed up at 8%. So definitely cut it close. It was great.
Good on you for finding a car rental place that charged the battery to 100%. I feel like that doesn't always happen in this great nation of ours. You know,
I was definitely surprised myself because I've rented for them before and they've given me cars at like, you know, 45%. So to see it at 100 was nice. But they only had one EV to choose from, so I just had to take what they gave me, right?
At least you got a good one. Last time I tried to do that, they gave me a Dodge Hornet plug-in hybrid, and I'm still mad about it. All right, well, let's get down to it. So what is the state of the Slate truck factory in Warsaw? There's not much to it there, right?
No, it's an empty room. I'm only kind of slightly exaggerating. Basically, they've... the event was kind of like, you know, it's almost like a pseudo groundbreaking if you think about it. They've got possession of the former printing factory, and they've done some alterations. I think one of the main things they've done is there was a former ink tank where they stored all the ink to print all of the stuff, all the basically tabloids and like coupons and stuff like that. They've turned that into a meeting room, and I guess it's supposed to be their customer experience center. And that's kind of where they had everybody meet and do all the, you know, pomp and circumstance and all the curating for the tours. But we did a tour of the facility. I think it's like 1.4 million square feet, something like that. And right now it's mostly empty. But they are making a lot of progress. Basically what they're doing right now is kind of knocking down walls. So they understand where they're going to put certain machinery. They're sort of planning out the flow of how things will be made in the factory. So it's moving along, but I think to the untrained eye, if you were to go there, you'd be like, well, geez, well, they haven't really done much at all. But that's not true.
I got to ask real quick. You were there with a bunch of like the local dignitaries, elected officials, as well as journalists. Like what was the overall vibe? Like, is there like a lot of excitement in Warsaw over Slate? Is it like trepidation? Like how are people feel about it in the community?
I think mostly excitement. Warsaw is kind of, I wouldn't say in the middle of nowhere. It's about halfway between South Bend, Indiana, and Fort Wayne, Indiana. So it's kind of a smaller town that doesn't, that's kind of lost jobs in the past. So I think a lot of the local people are very excited to have, like, you know, a new source of employment come into the area. So everyone's cool. Everybody's really excited to see it succeed.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they do have some time to get that machinery and stuff in there, right? Production is supposed to start in about a year, like toward the end of 2026. So, I mean, the big question that we've written about and talked about before is, like, what happens to Slate now that the EV tax credit is gone, right? Part of the reason that they, or part of the benefit of building in America with American source batteries was that they could take advantage of this $7,500 credit that, you know, they were advertising would make the truck cost under $20,000 with incentives, like $19,995 or something. So what happens to Slate when the tax credit goes away? Like, did you ask them about that? What did they kind of say about that?
Yeah, I asked them about that, and they still were in pretty high spirits. I know that sounds like, you know, I don't know how to put it, like, they're kind of like whistling past the graveyard, but I don't think that's true.
A little bit of spin, almost.
Yeah, a little bit of spin, right? Like, you know, they're kind of, but I think they're honestly, you know, in high spirits. Basically what they say is, like, you know, even though we won't be able to get the federal tax credit, and that's kind of a bummer, they basically pivoted saying, like, you know, there are a lot of state level tax credits and tax and EV incentives that the truck likely would qualify for. Like, I was talking to the COO, Jeremy Snyder, and he basically said, you know, we're seeing a lot of the reservations for the Slate truck are in states that still have, like, you know, EV incentives. I think I wrote a piece about this for either yesterday or today. That basically said, you know, I think Oregon has like a $7,500 one, which, you know, that matches the federal tax credit. Illinois has $4,000. New York State has $2,000. There's 17 states that still have EV incentives. So although it may not be quite the same as you know, the $7,500 federal one, there's still going to be a lot of incentives that'll continue to make the Slate affordable. So that's kind of how they got around it. But although there still is trepidation, but I think there's the kind of trepidation for the whole industry. So what can you do?
I think these states are really going to have to advertise that these credits exist. Like, I run inside EVs, and I feel like I should be able to list them off the top of my head, and I can't. And, like, yeah. I actually don't know if the EV6 I leased a year ago, if that got any sort of New York State credit. Again, this is literally my job. So,
there's also a problem, like, you know, I think I kind of touched on it in the piece that I wrote, that some of these state level programs don't always have the budget. Like Oregon's, you know, they're pretty open about the fact. I think you have to lease or buy the car, but by the 8th of this year of September, because they're going to be out of money.
Yeah, the fund is running out. That drives.
Yeah, the coffers that, you know, pay out for these programs are not, you know, unlimited. So that's unfortunate. But, you know, once again, that's not necessarily a Slate problem or a Slate constant. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I got to ask, like, but kind of a question for both of you. Like, you both have seen and gotten up close with and like sat in the Slate truck. Nobody, as far as I know, has driven it yet, but, like, you know, you both have a lot of experience with it. Like what do you really think after being in that? Like, I remember, Kev, you sent me like a photo of the interior, and I've always like loved the idea of the Slate truck. And then I looked at the photo you sent, and I was like, would I really spend $25,000 on that? So, like, what's your take, guys?
You go first, Kevin.
Oh God!
You got fresher thoughts.
Yeah,
I try to reserve my impressions because I know the cars that we looked at are, like, you know, kind of handmade prototypes where a lot of materials are stand-ins. You know, final assembly is not necessarily representative of what the customer will buy, but I am worried. You know, I think a lot of people say they want a basic stripped down truck until they get there.
Yeah.
You know? Especially since, you know, I have another piece that's in the works right now. They're kind of going up against Ford now, which will have a four-door truck that, you know, CEO Jim Farley directly said would not be stripped down. for a little bit more than the Slate truck. So you know, they're kind of competing with, I don't want to say half a truck, but effectively a stripped down half truck compared to like a full featured, full fat vehicle from something else, from like a manufacturer that is known for making cars.
Yeah.
It kind of reminds me of, in kind of in the most charitable, nice way, it reminds me of a Chinese, basically delivery truck with Americana styling on it. Like it reminds you of like a Geely Farizon branded van, stuff that's like kind of designed to be, you know, for workers, not necessarily for people.
Yeah, like a work, oh, truly a work vehicle. And I think that there are folks that like, they saw this and ran with the idea, oh, here comes a cheap truck for $25,000. I think it's a little more utilitarian and built for, you know, like delivery vehicle work than that.
I just think about like, you know, I think about if I were to go for a Slate, what I would need, you know, the kind of bare minimum to make it desirable for me. Like I don't want a truck. I would want another set of seats. I would want the SUV body style. I would at least, you know, at the very least want a radio of some sort. And I feel like that's going to end up at prices that are very much not $25,000.
Yeah.
Especially since like, you know, the difference between a Slate, a loaded out Slate, and what I would imagine like, you know, an Equinox EV are probably going to be a lot closer than we think, you know? I mean, you can get an Equinox EV for what, just shy of $40,000.
No, so. It's like, I feel bad saying this on the Inside EVs podcast, but I was thinking this today. It's like, I don't know, man, like all things equal, like a Slate against like a used Ford Maverick. Like I genuinely don't know,
yeah.
You know, especially in a couple of years, if like Maverick hybrids get cheaper, like that's, I don't know. That's a tough one. Like Tim, you were also in this a few months ago. What do you think here?
I also was like, okay, this is a design prototype, so you can't really judge it. I think from the outside, like the size of it and the kind of proportions of it, like it is a really cute and cool looking pickup. It has this great kind of very simple and very utilitarian design. The inside, yeah, is like you get in and you see how they made it cost, you know, $20,000+. Like it has a lot of kind of molded plastic bits. Like you have to pay extra if you want. Instead of like a little molded area where you could put your cups, like a real, you know, like center console. So like, there's a lot that you have to pay for. I don't know. It's going to be like a big, really interesting test of the market, because it's like, how much are people willing to pay? Like, honestly, freaks like us might be willing to pay, you know, that $25,000 for a car that's like really interesting and really customizable. Like, yeah, you get the cheap one and then you decide you want to swap out the seats or swap out like the armrests for like a different material, and you can do that, you know, every year. Like that, I think that's a really cool concept that might actually get people to say, okay, like, you know, I can buy this $30,000 Ford truck that's kind of similar to like the trucks I've owned in the past, or I can buy this $25,000 or $27,000 Slate that like has this added benefit of the customizability, the turn it into an SUV in 2 years when I have some kids, or in 5 years or whatever. So yeah, I think I have some of the same qualms as Kevin, but like, I do think we haven't seen a truck come to the market with this level of customization, and that, you know, that's a plus. That's something that Slate has that nobody else has.
Yeah. And I'm also anticipating a world where it's like, I have to imagine a good amount of their business is other businesses. And it's like, okay, cool. This fits our needs really well. Like my, you know, like some local grocery store delivery chain, almost like a Ford Pro customer. Like, yeah, we'll take 25 of those. We'll take 250 of those. We'll take 100 of those.
Yeah.
And, you know, they benefit from no fuel costs and like almost no maintenance. So like, I think that would be a big part of this too.
That's the other thing I was going to say is like, I don't know if it's the same where you guys are, but where I live, there are two-door kind of older, you know, 90s and 2000s Ford Rangers and Tacomas and Nissans all over the place. Like, this is what like every like landscaper uses, plumbers, gardeners.
California is like the land of that. That's like small truck, like, global headquarters.
They've all got these small two-door trucks. You don't need to like tow a boat or whatever. You just need somewhere to like put stuff. You want it to be as cheap as possible. And like a Slate could be really good for those people. You know, a 2000s Tacoma is like not cheap either. You know, yeah. Those are like, people love those things. So I do think I agree. There's a big market for like commercial customers for this thing.
Kevin, any other big takeaways or interviews or conversations you have at Slate? I know you're still writing about this stuff on InsideEVs.com, but like what else was on your mind after that trip?
I think for me, what I want to see, I feel like we're going down to the point with Slate where we need to drive it. Honestly, there's not much else I can say about it. I think now it just kind of comes down to execution. You know, what does this thing feel like? Is it going to be worth you spending your money on? Because a lot of these ideas are really cool. Even the ones I'm kind of skeptical about, but it's just like, all right, well, what's it going to do? You know?
Yeah. And so elaborate on like what you asked them about. You asked Jeremy Snyder, this former Tesla guy, right? Who's their COO. You asked him about, okay, how do you feel that Ford now has this $30,000 EV coming to market in a similar time frame as you guys? Different kind of approach. What do they say to that? Does that concern them?
No. He basically said, like, you know, he basically feels that because Slate's so unique with its level of customization, that basically Slate is in a class of its own. You know, despite you know, the Ford, theoretical Ford truck and the Slate truck being roughly about the same price, the level of customization, he doesn't see them being as like competitors. Whether or not that's going to be true, I don't know. That's kind of where I kind of get a little skeptical, because, you know, personally, I feel like a lot of Americans are lazy. You know, I'm not convinced that Americans will be willing to customize their vehicles in to the same level that I think Slate thinks it does. You know, a radio or even like a quickie little decal or sticker to put on the outside of a truck is one thing. But, you know, taking the whole back half of the car off and installing some seats sounds complicated. But he said, like, you know, Slate is very, very hopeful and very like, you know, they see their clientele really latching onto that part of the vehicle. And he says that that's why they're in a class of one. Well, once again, we'll just have to see what happens when the car comes out, or when we start getting like, you know, times to the ability to drive the vehicle and see what it's about. I think that's where everybody is right now.
Yeah, and see how much it actually ends up costing, right? Because like we still don't really know. Like they've been advertising that mid-20s quote unquote price point, and like we don't know if that's toward the low end or toward the high end, or how much. Right. Any of these accessories cost, which will also be a big defining factor.
To be fair, the COO Snyder, he did say basically the price of the truck has not changed. You know, even with the loss of the EV tax credit, nothing has changed as far as like, you know, what it costs to build or make the truck. So that's a good sign. Mm-hmm.
I guess. I mean, I was kind of expecting them to say, and I still would not rule out them saying, okay, we're going to reduce the price. We're going to try to match closer to what that subsidized price would have been, because,
right,
you know, it's kind of harder sell at 27K than it is at 20, right?
Well, they're still saying mid 20s,
but currently not in the plans for them.
No, or at least they didn't tell me that. I tried.
Maybe Bezos could have underwritten this a little bit more, but that was before his divorce, and he's not as liquid as he used to be. So it's bad timing all around.
Probably have to have an Amazon Prime membership, huh?
Get a discount. I would not put it past him, man. Something like that.
Yeah, and I guess maybe we'll leave it here with one more question. You know, you've driven more EVs in China, more Chinese-made EVs than probably any other American journalist. You know, when you look at the Slate as this being like kind of the next a direction for the American auto industry, like a next step in this industry in EVs, and you look at what's coming out of China and the potential for those kind of very high tech and very impressive cars to come to America in the next few years, maybe longer timeline than that, but someday, right? Someday we might have Chinese cars competing on the same turf as a Slate. Like, what do you think about that sort of competition? It, you know, to me, it feels like maybe a slate, like these Chinese cars and these Chinese customers are just like a different, it's a different thing. Like they really value this high tech stuff. Maybe there's a market here for people who don't want that. How do you feel about this competition that might play out?
That's a good question. I think that, you know, during the slate presentation, there was kind of like a little bit of a saber rattling from some local politicians, basically about how, you know, we need cars like the Slate to effectively beat off China. And I'm not convinced this is the car to do that. And not that there's, and once again, I can only say so much. We have not experienced the Slate on the road yet, but I have experienced Chinese cars on the road. And, you know, we talk a lot about, you know, infotainment and car connectivity and how high tech Chinese vehicles are. But I think, you know, RJ's experience said something really cool, you know, about how, you know, we're not talking about how good Chinese vehicles are.
Rivian CEO
basically talked about how, you know, we're not talking about how good these Chinese vehicles are. And I think a lot of Chinese cars, if we were to take away some of that high tech stuff, you're still left with a really, you know, solid base. You know, that's something that, like, you know, handles nicely, is comfortable, is well made. And I don't know if I'm necessarily seeing that level from Slate yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Once again, I can only say so much from, you know, static prototypes. Like, everything kind of hinges on what does this car do when it's on the road. But I don't want to say that I'm worried, but I'm worried.
Hopefully we find out soon. I love the idea. I love that there's more startups trying new things. But in the end, it just comes down to product always. So we'll see. Well, Kevin Williams, as always, man, thank you for joining us today. And thank you for making the trek out to Indiana. We hope to get both you guys behind the wheel of that as soon as we can. Very exciting.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at ipvanish.com/audio.
Well, now it's time again for Plus Minus, our segment where we talk about who's up and who's down in the EV world this week. Tim, what you got for me?
I have a plus this week, and it's Audi. This week we saw the Audi Concept C, which is a very cool new electric concept car. We don't know whether it's going to actually go into production sometime, but they're saying that this is, you know, a concept design of a two-seater electric sports car. And this thing looks really sick.
Looks badass. It's so cool.
It does. Yeah, it's very cool. It's very like angular. It has the vibe of the old Audi TT or the Audi R8. This like really sleek coupe design. It has like a targa top. I would love it if Audi made this. I think at some of its worst angles, it does have the same vibe of that Jaguar. It has that like really boxy front end that looks a lot like the Jaguar EV that got all the hate for being woke. But Audi Concept C, make it.
People have said that the Jaguar comparison, like respectfully, I just don't see it. We know our company's vision plan isn't great. Maybe that has something to do with it. But like I'm with you. I think this thing, I've been waiting for like Audi to get its like, you know what, together in design for years now, because I just remember like starting like the late 90s through the 2000s, like they were just on fire. I mean, like the TT, the first R8, the Iron Man car.
Yeah.
Even like the A4 and A5, they were just like such good designs. And they really put this like kind of like third rate, forgettable, also ran German brand that like was a drop in the bucket compared to like Mercedes and BMW. Like the great designs like put that company on the map. And they haven't been that lately. Like, I really love the new Q6 and SQ6. You drove that last year. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It's hardware-wise, massively impressive vehicle. It looks like something that, like, Infiniti designed and lost to Audi in a poker game. And, like, I don't mind that. I don't mean that in a nice way either. So it's, like, good to see them get to the back of their roots and, like, get some swagger back. So good on you, Audi. I'm excited.
Yeah.
I should see it next week in Munich. I'm really, really excited to check that out in person. Get some photos.
Oh, yeah. Big teaser. Patrick's going to the IAA, the Munich Auto Show. We're going to have a whole bunch of his thoughts next week on a whole bunch of new cars that are debuting there, new EVs. So keep an eye out for that.
I told you couldn't keep me out forever, Germany. I said I'd be back. The Munich airport is just too nice. Just too nice. I had to go see it again, you know?
The last thing I'll say is we actually probably have a good sense that this actually will go into production, or at least what I would say is,
yeah,
you know, Audi sister brand Porsche does have these electric sports cars coming, the electric versions of the Boxster and the Cayman. And so totally possible that Audi decides to build this concept C on that same technology.
Yeah, they'll do like a e-tron GT, like Taycan thing with that mm-hmm. platform, like almost certainly. And like, who wins? Everybody does. Cool. I also have a plus this week. Like we talked a lot about like GM and Cadillac doing well at EVs. I'm going to give some flowers to the Ford Mustang Mach-E, man, because like the fact that it had its best sales month ever in August is pretty cool. Like that thing has been around a while now. Like it was kind of like one of the first to really throw down with like the Model Y mm-hmm. In the early 2020s, and you know, like it's still one of my favorite EVs to drive. And like it is like Ford, don't be bad for saying this, but like you can get a used one for like a sick deal. Like I've seen ones in like the $20,000 range. That's a hell of a lot of car for that. But like I'm thrilled that people are still buying them new, because that's a good machine, and it's cool that it's continuing to do so well this far into its life cycle. So yeah, congrats to all the Mach-E owners out there, the new ones. Like you have some fun in that car, you know. You'll rack up speeding tickets in it like it's a gas Mustang all day. All right. Well, thanks for listening to the Plugged In podcast for Inside EVs. We'll be back next Friday. Today's show is produced by Mike Perkins and is brought to you by the Motorsport Network.
Make sure to follow the show wherever you get your podcasts, subscribe to the Inside EVs YouTube channel, and check out all our EV coverage at InsideEVs.com. See you next time.
See you next time.
Did you know using your browser in incognito mode doesn't actually protect your privacy? Take back your privacy with IPVanish VPN. Just one tap and all your data, passwords, communications, browsing history, and more will be instantly protected. IPVanish makes you virtually invisible online. Use IPVanish on all your devices, anytime you go online at home, and especially on public Wi-Fi. Get IPVanish now for 70% off a yearly plan with this exclusive offer at IPVanish.com/audio.